From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Giants and Little People with Stephen Quayle. Here's what's happening. A power outage hit the White House and much of the Washington area on Tuesday, snarling trains, emptying museums, cutting electricity to government buildings in the U.S. Capitol for hours. The Justice Department and State Department were among thousands of customers affected, along with the University of Maryland and some World Bank offices. The power company, Pepco Holdings, said the outage stemmed from a dip in voltage because of a transmission line trouble. The Department of Homeland Security said no indication the outages had been caused by any malicious activity. Enough, if that wasn't enough, Russian hackers behind the damaging cyber intrusion of the State Department in recent months apparently used that perch to penetrate sensitive parts of the White House computer system. Now, while the White House has said the breach only affected an unclassified system, that description belies the seriousness of the intrusion. Let's check in with Lauren Weinstein, our resident expert here. It's getting a little dangerous to use a computer, Lauren.
Well, I think that the difference between unclassified systems and classified systems is a really important one here, because what's really happened is, as there have been more hack attacks, and whether these are really from Russia or whether they're from the proverbial 13-year-old in the basement in Cincinnati, it's still a real problem. But I think what's happened is government officials have been learning, as have many of us, that if you're going to have information that is sensitive of any kind, you don't want to put it on systems that are poorly secured. So it's become clear that more and more the important information has been moved over to classified systems and classified networks, including information that otherwise might have been kept on unclassified systems, just for the added security. And the classified networks really are more secure. On the other hand, there's no excuse for sloppiness.
That's right.
And even the machines that you have that are unclassified, that are doing more mundane White House and Office of the President sorts of things, you want to be properly secured. And these sort of stories, just don't inspire confidence generally. We can certainly agree on that.
Well, Lauren, what happens one day if a rogue group breaks into the Defense Department computer system and launches nukes or something like that?
They can't do it.
Are you sure? Promise?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't have access to classified information about this. But what is even known publicly about the launch code systems and launch code protections? I mean, we've all seen the movies. We've seen Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, yeah.
And we've seen
War Games.
Failsafe and War Games, right? All these movies. But, the people who designed the systems, the launch control systems and the systems that control the arming of nuclear weapons and things like that are pretty smart. And those are the crown jewels, really, of our defense system. Now, is it impossible for something to happen? No, nothing's impossible. But I worry a lot more, actually, about physical failures rather than cyber failures, because a lot of these systems that are the most sensitive in terms of what you're talking about there aren't even really connected to the public Internet. On the other hand, we still have to worry about somebody stealing nuclear weapons.
That's right.
We have to worry a lot about all that loose fissile material that's floating around that terrorists could use to build even a crude nuclear bomb or a dirty bomb. Those are things that can definitely happen and probably will happen sooner or later. And we can think a lot about the cyber attacks and things, and that gets a lot of money for the cyber companies and for the government agencies that are protecting against cyber intrusions, supposedly. But I worry a lot more about the low-tech ways that we could get into real trouble with nuclear weapons and things with terrorists, because it's much more likely that it'll happen that way than from a computer keyboard.
You got that right. Lauren, I don't know what we'd do without you. Thank you so much. In California, water authorities are using a new tool in a major effort to crack down on people and businesses wasting water in light of new water restrictions issued by Governor Jerry Brown to fight the incredible drought here. The Long Beach Water Department says, for example, sprinklers at a McDonald's restaurant went on for 45 minutes at a time, twice a night, for an undefined number of nights. So what are they going to do to fight this? They're putting in smart meters all over the place. They will know when you turn on the faucet, take a shower, go to the restroom, and then they will fine you $500 a day if you go over the limit. And a federal appeals court is asking the Obama administration to explain why the government should be allowed to keep secret its plan to shutter mobile phone service during critical emergencies. That's right. If something drastic happens, the government wants the right to shut off your phone. The Department of Homeland Security came up with a plan known as Standing Operating Procedure 303 after cell phones were used to detonate explosives targeting a London public transportation system. This is the digital age, and it spells out a unified voluntary process for the orderly shutdown and restoration, they say, of wireless services during critical emergencies, such as the threat of radioactivated improvised explosive devices. Man, this is coming at us way too much. Congressional critics of the Iran nuclear deal are worried that Washington and Iran can't even agree on what's in the accord that they struck last week because both governments are sending out fact sheets that are different. What the heck's going on? Let's check in with the online columnist, Dr. John Curtis. John, I don't know if this is ever going to get done.
Well, I think if it's up to the GOP, it's certainly, we're getting a little too close with Rand Paul announcing today that the conciliatory mood over regarding anything that President Obama does, including any treaties or agreements, this nuke thing that deal with Iran out of Lausanne, the opposition to it by the GOP is largely to humiliate the president. I think on balance, I think most people agree that it's a good thing to have some agreement that involves intrusive inspection in Iran's nuclear facilities than to not have it. So it's going to be a complicated mess from here on. And Bob Corker, the Senate Foreign Relations Chairman, has a new bill out that if it passes, it would put the Senate in charge of when they would re-implement some kind of sanctions on Iran, which would essentially kill this deal. So there's a lot of back and forth and political maneuvering going on right now.
OnlineColumnist.com, that's how you can track Dr. John Curtis. Scientists have for the very first time detected small amounts of radioactivity from the 2011 Fukushima reactor accident in Japan in a seawater sample taken from the shoreline of North America. Radioactivity, of course, can be dangerous, and monitoring the oceans is critical, according to a marine chemist. Very sad story here out of Maryland. Accidental carbon monoxide poisoning killed a single father and his seven children in their one-story Maryland Eastern Shore home. Lloyd Edwards says his stepson, 36-year-old Rodney Todd, had bought a generator after the power was shut off to the home in Princess Anne because he wasn't able to pay. Carbon monoxide poisoning killed them all. Smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, and they're combined these days, they are not expensive. This is what they sound like, by the way. They go off. That's what you hear. It wakes you up. Every house should have one or several of them all over the place. Put one by the furnace. Put one where you sleep. Just be safe. About 80,000 people could die if there was a widespread outbreak of an antibiotic-resistant blood infection, according to a government document. Geez, the National Register of Civil Emergencies says an outbreak could be expected to hit 2,000 people and that 2 in 5 might die. The documents say that high numbers of deaths could also be predicted from other forms of resistant infection.
I started singing bye-bye, Miss American Pie.
Yep, the original manuscript of Don McLean's American Pie, guess what it sold for? $1.2 million. I bet that's more than the song made when it came out. Sold at a New York auction. They thought it could have fetched $1.5 million. Amazing. One of our stories in our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com, a mysterious ring of fire has been spotted in space thanks to Albert Einstein's theory of relativity. The ring, located 12 billion light years away, is an illusion created by the alignment of two distant galaxies. Up next, we talk about the spirit of alchemy Karen Dahlman joins us. She's the queen of the Ouija board. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. What did that guy just say? Couldn't hear him. He was talking too fast. Karen Dahlman with us, author of Spirits of the Ouija, believes that life is meant to be joyful. And I like that attitude. She's got her new work called The Spirit of Alchemy. It's part of her trilogy series. Karen, welcome back.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
My pleasure. I have coined the phrase, you are the queen of the Ouija board.
That's fine. I'll take it. And this book does talk about the king and queen and sacred marriage, so you're right on line by saying that.
Now, this is the third of your three books. The other two, of course, one was called The Spirit of Creativity, The Spirit of the Ouija. They all mesh together, though, don't they?
Well, yes. And how they mesh together is the communication that I continue to have and have had for over 42 years now with my spirit friends from the other side and other dimensions. So they mesh by the fact that they have profound information to share and that I share this within the books. Now, the first book is really about tapping into your own creative principle, your own creative essence, and begin to craft the life of your dreams. Where the second book, as you know, we spoke a lot about it in the past, is really about how I did this, how I worked with the Ouija board for positive benefits and gains and personal development. And this third book takes it to a whole nother level. This is what I call alchemical Ouija, esoteric Ouija, advanced Ouija. This goes into the depths of the esoteric teachings of the alchemists, the great alchemists of the Middle Ages and Medieval Ages, and way back beyond that. And it goes really into how to work with what's natural, the seen and the unseen, to transform base, the dross of your life, or base metals, into gold or golden opportunities for your life. So we really get into some advanced topics here with this third book of the trilogy series.
When I was a kid, I used to think alchemy was merely someone who was trying to create gold. And then, of course, as I got a little bit more into this sacred teachings, I began to realize it's far more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, the alchemy you're talking about is known as metachemistry. And that really was the whole idea of applying processes and constituents to base metals. And it was following really the natural laws that everything follows in the universe. And they accelerated basically this process that was natural in nature. The type of alchemy I'm really discussing here is the hermetic or philosophical alchemy, which deals with personal transformation. It's when the essence of a person as a human sees their regular self being transformed into more of one's divine essence. So this whole book is about really looking at life not as random events that are just strung along by each other, but truly as everything has a purpose and a meaning. Allow these events to unfold within your life and really understand that there's a synchronicity has happening beneath all this, a blueprint to all this. We can call that the sacred science, if you will. But I really want to help people to look at their lives as a process of alchemy, that they really have the ability to work with these forces, the seen and the unseen, as the alchemists did, and many great mystery traditions of the past have done, to be able to influence their life for the best, for the better, and to make changes in the world. And so that's what the premise of this whole book really gets into, that type of philosophical, hermetic type of alchemy.
Karen, Tom and I were at the dinner tonight, and we almost had to break up a fight between a manager and some customers who were there. I'm not going to get into why they were fighting, but people seem to be whacked out these days. I mean, they truly seem to be uptight and upset about the slightest thing. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have noticed that. I mean, there's so much change going on. The one thing, George, we can count on in our life and in the world is change. It is a constant. And with all this change that's abound, you know, with the stock market, with the economy, with the world, with ISIS, with all these weather, all this stuff going on that you talk about on your show, that you're informing people about, really sets the people on edge when there's not a way to really understand it or to even grasp it. And a lot of these things change so quickly and rapidly, it's forcing us to change. Now, if we can learn to see it the other way around and learn to see the change within ourselves first as an effect that's creating what's out here, That's what the alchemists did. They understood what was going on internally, that they knew that they could also affect what was going on externally, as opposed to being reactive to what's going on around them. Yeah, I see this all the time. You see it, of course, George, in L.A. traffic. There's so much drama.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's right on the roads in L.A., there's so much drama, yeah. And you hear these horrible stories. People are on edge. You know,
they're just uptight.
Power. That's, you know, we've given away our power, and it's time to, you know, move with the change, to look at the change, to embrace the change, and see what we can do internally to work with it. It's not an external reactive thing. It's an internal thing. We all have to kind of sweep our own back doorstep. We have to sweep our own porches. You know, we can't clean the whole world, but if we start here with ourselves, the whole world will end up being clean.
We're with Karen Dahlman. This is the third of her series of books. This one is called The Spirit of Alchemy. Why is it that you think the Ouija board is a very useful tool and instrument, and so many people, including me, think it's a portal, a doorway to evil?
Well, you know, it is what you believe about it, and I've always been real firm about that. You get what you harbor within, and you get what you believe. And so our beliefs will bring that towards us. I mean, as we've discussed before, it's truly a neutral device. You know, it's wood, it's cardboard, or mine's Masonite that I use the most. It's just a neutral tool, and as we discussed before, we don't need that tool. And in fact, I don't always use the board to get my messages from my spirit friends. Just that I've been pretty good in using this tool, so I still use it. I see the work that I do with this board and the teachings that I've learned from this work, and it's not just from the board, but it's from the interactions with the other dimensions. I find that the board can be sometimes an easier, quicker way to access these realms. It can be a starting point. A lot of the great teachers in the past of esoteric and spiritual truths, such as Jane Roberts, Betty White, from the earlier century, Pearl Currens, they've used this device, and they moved beyond it as well. But it was a way for them to be in touch with other dimensions. And so I see it very much that way. That is like, it is like a cosmic phone. You dial up, you tune in, and you've got to know what you're doing, George. You really do. I mean, it gets this bad rap because people mess around with it,
sure. The
board, or even just any kind of spiritual work, whether it's divination, tarot reading, and not knowing what they're doing. And so through trial and error and many, many years of doing this, I've fine-tuned it to a place where I can sit down and write the right spirits and friends of mine that I've been communicating with over, some of these have been friends, my friends for like almost 25 years now, will communicate back with me. It's a consistent communication we've had over many years that makes it real, that makes it work, that makes it come out with profound sayings and advice and suggestions and ideas. And so this book, The Spirit of Alchemy, Secret Teachings of the Sacred Union, was really born out of some of my earlier work with the board. And it really, the way I work with the board now, it's at a level of trying to do nothing more than to find that my own greatness within and others' greatness within. It's about unlocking that potential within ourselves so we don't have to be reactive to the world at large. The world at large is basically an illusion to the alchemist. And what it's really comprised of is what they are within and what they believe in terms of their own divine essence. And that's what you end up getting. So if you can tap into this divine essence of yourself, source, higher self, call it as you will, you'll find that you'll start tracking that outside of yourself externally. So that's what you end up getting more often than the fear that we've talked about most people find from the Ouija board. But it's not a tool for everybody. But definitely it can be used in this level and this way to really make some major changes within yourself, thus without in the world.
Karen's website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Karen, after we take the break, we'll take some calls, but I want you to talk about how you've divided your book into the outer world, the underworld, the inner world, the upper world, and you tell me about these places, these various aspects here. In your opinion, we've only got about 30 seconds or so, are we headed down the right path?
Yeah, I think actually we are. You know, with every change, things have to be shaken up. And right now, things are being shaken up. And when they shake up like this, you know, the chips are going to fall. Truly, in chaos theory, there's order. And we need to remember that. There really is order, and things aren't random. And so we're being asked to transform our consciousness, our awareness, the ethers, so we can step into this new realm of being. And it's going to ask for a lot of structures and paradigms to fall away. And that's what we're seeing right now, George. The paradigms are disappearing and we're being replaced with new ones that we're not very familiar with.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment with Karen Dahlman, the Spirit of Alchemy, and we'll take your phone calls. And also, if you've witnessed whacked out people, check in with us next on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, Stephen Quayle joins us with his latest work called Little Creatures. The gates of hell are opening. So make sure you're part of that. We're with Karen Dahlman, her work, The Spirit of Alchemy. Karen, before we go to calls, let's break down what you talk about, these realms of worlds, very quickly. The outer world, underworld, inner world, upper world. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, great question. You know, the idea is that we have so many facets of ourselves that exist within these different realms. We're truly multidimensional people, truly multidimensional beings, and we forget this. And so often we just disregard parts of ourselves and we don't think about it, we don't look at it. For example, humanity in the past, thousands of years, has really, really brushed off the whole divine feminine, the whole aspect of the sacred queen that's part of the sacred king. And without that aspect of ourselves, we're missing out on the whole part of ourselves that is more receptive, loving, caring, open, calm, respectful. And we just push that away. And so what I'm saying in this the book with the different realms, I'm saying we really need to remind ourselves of these aspects of ourselves. If we want to really exist in this new transformation that's happening in the world, we really need to pull ourselves together. We need to pull our pieces back together and not shun the aspects of ourselves that's been pushed down by humanity over the eras. So I'm not just talking about the feminine. I'm talking about the imaginal realm, the unseen, our fear of the unknown, the mysterious, the darkness. We tend to think that all the boogeymans come out of the darkness, and that's what we're afraid of. And the truth was, our ancestors of antiquity, they were not afraid of this realm. They really relished in it, in this energy, because they understood that it was where they came, from whence they came. And that's important. My whole story takes you back to these realms. So I basically call the outer realm, the outer world, our life right now. And then all of a sudden we have an epiphany or an awakening or something transforms in our life. And it's not always happy. It could be something that forces us to look at a descent into our inner world and underworld, and that could be like death, divorce, destruction, deception, or it could be of our own choice through delight and our desire. I call those the six big D's of descent. But there's a reason why we have to look at ourselves. We're all forced to do this at some time in our life. I'm saying let's get on that journey now because the world's changing and we're reacting too much to what's out there, and let's find out to find our own inner locus of control. So we go down into the depths of ourselves, and this is a real place within us. It's a real place within the unseen multidimensional realms, as my spirit friends always teach me. As we go into these places within ourselves, we begin to reclaim those parts that we repressed, the shadow side, our inner demons, and we begin to uncover the inner daemons, the helpers that are really there. And it's a real thing that happens, and as we begin to work with this and underworld in the inner world way and come to know these aspects ourselves, it's like we're regathering these powerful pieces of us that once maybe helped us, protect us, or did whatever it could to keep us in line, but now it's time to be strong in ourselves again. So we bring back that divine feminine, we bring her back into our heart, we reclaim that imaginal part of us that was a child that maybe had imaginary playmates, maybe saw spirits. I mean, my book is full of these visitations.
We all had that as kids.
We all have done that, right. And it's time now to reclaim it because that is truly, that's our key back into our empowerment so we can live in these changing times. We do it from within. We don't do it again, as we discussed, through the L.A. traffic and be reactive. We do it from our own internal locus of control. And we do it by going back and being in touch with these realms of ourselves, which are truly real, energetic vibrations. And as we do that, we start to transform the dross of our life into golden opportunities for growth and inspiration. So thus, that's the whole idea of this alchemical transformation that I talk about in this book.
Can everybody make that transformation?
They will make it whether they want to or not. I'm saying this is one way to maybe help yourself through it and enjoy the journey. I mean, again, life is meant to be joyful. I truly believe that. My spirit friends remind me of that almost every session when I communicate with them. Life is meant to be enjoyed. And if you enjoy your life and you vibrate at that frequency, you continue to spiral up and out of these other realms into more of an upper realm, which is really your feet on the ground. It's really your divine self. And you start bringing together all the paradoxes of duality that we live within, bad, good, evil, terrible, all these things that we talk about, that, you know, the sphere of the Ouija, it's good, it's bad, all these things. It's not just, it's to say that within us we hold all these spheres and we hold all these opportunities. And if we can bring them together, we can transmute them and move them from these base metals into ways to see our life differently so we are more empowered. But, you know, we're going to, this is going to happen one way or the other. You'll be forced to do it, or you can start doing it on your own. And when you do it, you'll find that your life will change. We have the ability to create an incredible life right here, right now, for ourselves, in the moment of now, as we begin to embody all these facets of ourselves. But we have to pull ourselves back together. And when we do that, we will see ourselves, we will see ourselves in our worlds that have transformed. This is what we're being forced to do, George, right now. I really believe, you know, at the whole Mayan calendar thing, and it was just a shift in consciousness. And this is what I'm talking about. This is a shift in consciousness we must make internally. But we'll be forced to do it, or we can do it on our own.
Okay, let's take some calls now. Let's go to Buck in Alaska, west of the Rockies. Hey, Buck. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hey, George. It's an honor to talk to you. I've been listening to you since I was just a young boy out in my dad's fishing boat.
I love it.
Well, I called in because you were talking about if you've seen any whacked out people. And I just wanted to mention what's been going on up here in Anchorage.
Okay.
Had a total of 7 murders last year, and just in these first couple months, we're already up to at least 10 murders.
Jeez, already? And we're only in the 4 months. My God.
Yeah, and I've just noticed it going out in the last couple of years. People just, like you said, are really on edge.
And we don't know why. Any guess, Buck, what's happening out that way?
I don't know if it's social media and this generation of people. It seems like they're always kind of looking inwards, you know, at themselves and not really looking outwards.
Karen, let's go back to you on that. And Buck, thanks for the call. I mean, here's an example. 7 murders last year in that area. Already this year, 10. Already.
Barely scratching the first end of the first quarter, beginning of the second. Yeah, it's really, we're seeing this everywhere. And I do think it's a statement, maybe social media somewhat, but I think it's really more, again, a statement at large that there's things shifting within us, within the psyche. Let's call it the collective unconscious of humanity. And as things shift and they have to fall apart, and unfortunately that's what we're seeing, and people don't know how to handle these changes. And the changes are real. Again, it's like the economy's falling apart. People are losing their jobs. There's a lot of inclement weather that's just destroying aspects of our country. And we got the drought going on. We got all these flooding. We got all these cold. We got, you know, people that are dying because they're trying to keep their house warm, and they end up suffocating. And, you know, there's so much going on, and we don't know how to deal with this. And so it is important to get that locus of control within yourself. And by doing that, it's not really about looking at yourself within. That's all you're focused on. You're doing it so you can be better out here in the world as you interact with others. That's what makes everything work a little easier, because people are going under such stress right now. And any bit of somebody that could be helpful to another, that really makes all the difference. And we can do that when we get back into our place of empowerment.
Well, we sure can. What do you mean by spiraling? You make reference to it a lot in your book.
Yeah, spiraling, this is the concept. In our life, we tend to shift up, shift down, shift out, shift in. And the idea is, everything moves really in circles. And one of the basic blueprints of the universe and all of life form is this wonderful spiral. And it's known in the Fibonacci series, it's known as different terms. But you'll see it in pine cones and antlers and all kinds of natural things that are of this earth are made, or I should say that at the very basic levels, they're in a spiral shape. And so I use the whole image of the spiral as a way to circle around, come back to the beginning, and start anew, but now a degree or two higher. As spiraling up, you begin to understand more. Spiraling in, you might begin to look at more. You might spiral out. We contract in our life. We go within, and then we expand back out. And that is how life works. Nothing is stationary. Everything is constantly moving, and it moves in these like circular patterns. And if you could think of it that way, everything is evolutionary, and everything is always growth. And instead of seeing things as a time, like a line, like a time-space continuum, if we look at it more in spirals, even our galaxy is in the shape of a spiral, this little arm sticking out. Everything kind of...
We've got a picture of a merging of a couple galaxies on our coasttocoastam.com website. Same thing. It's a nice spiral.
That's the blueprint. And so I'm saying, try to think of life that way, that instead of a straight line, because it'll help you go through this transformation. It's not like you go from point A to point Z. It's all kind of like a labyrinth. It might wind back in and might wind back out. But if you're aware of that, you're not going to be panicked so much when life does go, sometimes it feels like in circles. Know that every single direction you go, whether you think you made a bad choice or not, is always towards the evolution of yourself, of the soul. It's always in a positive way, and that's just the law of nature. It's always towards this growth, and yet growth in it has decay stagnation. We get that, and we have a rebirth that comes. But if you see it as a spiral, it allows you to see it a little bit different, so life isn't so static.
Let's go to Cleveland. Bob's with us, first-time caller. Bob, go for it.
Hello.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Good.
But yeah, I bought some property in rural Ohio, and we were doing some work out there. We're digging maybe like a 2 foot tablet.
Hey Bob, we're gonna have to get a better connection with you if you would. That's kind of breaking up. Darn! Sounds like he was on his way to a good story too, Karen.
I couldn't hear it. I know it was terrible.
Chopping up too. But we're with Karen Dahlman. We're going to take your calls with what's left of this hour as we talk about, of course, strange people acting in very weird moods, the spirit of alchemy. Why is it, Karen, does it seem that when this happens, it happens to the masses? Something's affecting the masses all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, we're all human, and we're all the same collective unconscious. We're all the same psyche. There's this matrix, let's call it a matrix of energy, that we're all tapped into, and it's universal. And so these patterns, we can talk about the spirals, we can talk about the archetypes, but there's basic patterns that we're all influenced by. And so it's kind of like the 100th monkey or the Kinki's 100th monkey syndrome. They talked about the monkeys washing their coconuts in the water and how they all started doing it after a while when they were on different islands and separated from each other. We work very similarly. We can look at that kind of as a, it's more of a metaphor, but it's the idea that we're all in this together. We're all part of the same web of life. We're all of source. We're all connected. This book that I wrote really talks about this interconnection. And when we start to understand this interconnection, we can actually start encouraging and creating synchronistic events where more things seem to happen that where the stars feel like they're aligned. And what we're seeing right now is that the stars are aligned in probably not the best way, because it feels that way to us. We're seeing so much change. But I'm going to beg to differ that change is at the end, it not always, we can't see it when we're in it, but it definitely has a new beginning for us, a new rung on that spiral. So I'm really encouraging people to start to rethink and relook at some of these things. But I also know, too, when we're in the moment of this upheaval, which it feels like, and we're hearing this from people all over, it's hard to find that. But we're being asked to think about these thoughts. Really, we are. We're being asked to change. And we're all tapped into that same ether, that same consciousness that's making us change. So that's why we're all feeling it. We're all getting the same kind of energy coming at us.
You don't think Big Brother is doing anything, do you? You know, with all these chemtrails.
I think there's a lot of forces from all different angles, George. You know, and to put your finger on one, you really can't. But that's all part of the picture. That's all part of the plan, and not that it's right. It's just part of the plan. And so what we can do, all we really can do, and you talk about on the show with all of your great guests, is, you know, try to prepare the best you can. You know, learn from the different people that are talking about it. Learn from yourself. Go out there and read about what's going on. But don't get in a fear-based place. And what the alchemist taught was that although things look like they're an upheaval, falling apart. I mean, they were greatly tortured and maimed and put underground from what they believed and talked about. They believed in the divinity found within themselves as they aspired to higher levels on this spiral I'm talking about. But it's important. What we can do is really think like the alchemist and think that, you know what, sometimes out there what we see is not really what's there. And it can be an illusion, but we have to learn to understand how to see it that way.
Ryan.
Because a lot of things are thrown at us that aren't real.
We go to Oregon now. Ryan's with us. Hello there, Ryan. Go ahead, sir.
I was just calling to ask if there was any way I could talk to my loved ones that have passed on through a Ouija board.
Ooh. Now, that's an interesting question, Karen.
Well, it sure is. George, you want to answer that one?
No, I'll let you. You're the queen of Ouija boards.
Right, okay. Absolutely, yes. I do it all the time. Although I will say this, that's something that people ask me to do when I have my open message circles. However,
can he do it? Does he need someone like you, or can he do it?
Well, listen, I'm not here to encourage Ouija board, but I am here to say there's many ways you can talk to your loved ones. And I want to say this, too. They talk to you all the time. We have to learn to be open. This is part of seeing what's kind of behind the veil and seeing the seen and the unseen and being open to the mysterious, because truly they are right here with us. It's so easy. They're like just like a spiral rung away. Again, it's not a line continuum. It's like this one little spiral away they are, and it's like another dimension. And they're here with you, and you may get a smell. You may get a sensation. You may get an incredible dream. You may see something on a license plate or a billboard that reminds you of your loved one. You may hear a song on the radio. All of this is synchronistic. All of this is ways that the unseen communicates to us. And you don't need a Ouija board, although that's what I use sometimes, but I go beyond that. I mean, I use dreams and lucid dreaming and altered states of awareness and meditation. There's many ways to do it. But I would say for you, the best way to do it is to really try to sit just silently and just ask, you know, what is it that you you want to hear from them? What can they tell you? How are they? And just allow what comes into your mind. It'll be a feeling, a sensation. It might be something in your body. It might be a thought. It might be a memory. And just allow that to move through you. And after time, you'll start to get more of these experiences. It really is, George, simple to be in touch with what's beyond this veil that we all think we just don't think we can get to it. It's right here with us. That's what this book helps you do, to be right there with this other side, this unseen aspect, and to reclaim it, and to know that really, truly is where we came from.
All right, you know, Ryan, sorry for your loss.
That's terrible.
It's not easy to have to go through
something
like that.
Not easy at all.
Like
you
that,
know, Karen. We know. We all know this.
Karen, in the waning moments here, would you get out your website for everybody, please?
Would love to. You can go to Karen A. Dahlman, DAHLMAN.com, or Creative Visions Publications, those are two plural words, .com. And you can find everything that's coming up, what I'm working on, my latest books, my next book. And then also, we've got a big conference at the end of the month. May I talk about that a little bit?
You've got called OuijaCon, don't you?
It's OuijaCon. Thank you. Yes, OuijaCon.
Jeez.
And we invite everybody out.
Go at your own risk, everyone. I'm kidding here.
Well, listen, it's going to be a great time. You've got some incredible speakers. Everybody's been on Coast to Coast with George before. That'll be there. And we're going to be discussing everything about Ouija and the communication with spirits. And come out. It's April 23rd to 25th in Baltimore, Maryland. We still have some tickets available. You can go to my website. I have a link directly to go buy your ticket. I'll be there. A lot of your favorite guests in the show will be there talking about everything, good, bad, the ugly, and in between about Ouija. So it's a great time. So come down. Please visit us.
I love it. All right, Karen.
George was there.
You take care of yourself. Yeah, I would have been there, but I'm going to be in San Mateo at the a New Living Expo conference on that weekend. Very, very busy April. Up next, Stephen Quayle joins us with his latest work on little creatures. The gates of hell are opening.